Remaker's Mark, Episode 53, Z. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in our 53rd episode, where we are discussing the political assassination-y foreign language drama Z, or Zed for our European compatriots out there. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight? And what is your favorite foreign language film? Or if that's just kind of too broad, what's your favorite foreign language film of late?
I'm well, recovering from a cold, so I apologize for any unmuted coughs. My favorite foreign language film, the first one that pops into my head, is Amelie. It's just a fantastic movie. But I also remember seeing in college Il Postino, and remember really being affected by that movie.
Nice.
So, two movies. Sorry.
That's all right. You get a chance to Wix everybody. That's your gift.
That's what I do.
That's what you do. Indeed. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you doing tonight? And what is a favorite foreign language film of yours?
I'm doing quite well, besides being a little slow on the draw. I have been racking my brain over what I probably would choose on this one. And I don't know that I have a specific foreign language film, but I do know that I have been really enjoying the Korean horror movies that have been coming out over the last few years. And I guess if I had to choose one, it would be, this isn't even a horror movie, but The Good, the Bad, and the Weird has been one I have enjoyed over and over again. Or else maybe Kung Fu Hustle.
Nice. I feel like that's gotten some shout outs recently, which is great.
It's such a lovely, odd, quirky little film.
Mm-hmm. Nice. The Good, the Bad, and the Weird sounds interesting. I'll have to check that out.
It's this. If you like Kung Fu Hustle, you will like that one as well.
Great. Duly noted. Lee hit him with a floppy baton. How are you tonight? And what is a favorite foreign language film of late / of yours?
I'm great, and probably of all time, probably Run Lola Run.
Ooh, good choice.
Which is a German film from the 90s. Something a little more current was another German film called Wetlands that I think came out in 2012 or 2013. It's really, really bizarre, but entertaining.
I don't think I've seen that one. I'll have to check that out, too.
Yeah.
We're learning. Yay. Very good. Mark Josting, how are you? And what's a favorite foreign language film of yours?
I'm great, thanks. And a favorite of mine is easily one of my favorite movies, period. And that's Princess Mononoke, which is the Japanese animated film from about 20 years ago.
Nice. Good choice. I like that a lot. That's a good one. My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host again this fine evening. And I think I'm going to go with of late. I think it's too broad for favorite foreign language film of all time. I saw Parasite pretty recently, the Bong Joon-ho film about kind of class struggles.
Yes.
And it was really, really something. It's gotten a lot of love, and it's definitely like a top five movie of the year. And if it can be both top five and maybe overrated, it might be, but it's super duper good. This is just a really, really good year of film. So it's a good problem to have when you're like up against really, really good movies. But I would highly recommend seeing Parasite. It's really good, really fun.
Yes.
You saw it, Jer?
Yes, ditto.
Nice.
Everything you said.
Excellent. Wunderbar. Up next, we are going to transition to a Remaker's Mark Recommends segment with our friend Andy here, since he chose Z. Andy, what is a recommendation that you have for us and our listeners?
So to counteract the slightly caustic taste of this movie, I'm recommending a kids band. So I don't know if Mark or Kyle, if you were aware of this group. I found out about them through a newsletter to alumni of my alma mater, St. Olaf College, of which Kyle and Mark are also alums. The group is called Lewis and Dan and the Invisible Band, composed of two college professors, Lewis and Dan, one of them who is a professor at St. Olaf College and one who is a professor at the crosstown rival Carleton College, who both happen to have kids about the same age, liked cool music, and realized that a lot, as they describe it, There wasn't really much really good kids music that wasn't like Kids Bop and things like that. So they decided to start their own band. And they have two albums out now. And let me tell you, I love them to death. And my kids love them.
Awesome.
They're super funny. They're super good. They're catchy. They're very original and unique and well done and not, you know, mind-numbingly dumb. I like listening to
it. It's not Baby Shark.
It's not. Oh, God, no. I like listening to it as much as my kids do. So we'll have to pop in a little sample of spaghetti underwear or 10-meter diving board or snow day or hot dog. That's a good one, too.
Okay, I'll drop one of those in there briefly right now.
Broccoli, kohlrabi, couscous bars, kimchi in jars, peas with wasabi, Brussels sprouts, cedar smoked trout, homemade granola, beans stew, lentils stew, paired with shakshuka.
Stop, please stop. I don't want any of that. Please, please, all I want is a
hot dog. All I want is a hot dog. Not a tofu dog, a hot dog.
And very good. Good recommendation. Are they like folky, rocky, punky?
Yeah, call indie rock.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
I like
very
it.
Cool stuff.
I love that it's legit to be a musician that makes music for kids now. Like, that's a legit thing. Like, I don't know, Andy, have you ever listened to Cuckoo Kangaroo?
I haven't, but I know they've been highly recommended.
Oh my God, they're great. Like, they toured on Warped Tour,
nice.
And they're amazing. They sing songs about, like, boogers and pizza and unicorns being real, and it's glorious.
Yeah.
Like, just really good electro pop that happens to be about farts and stuff, which is great.
There's a song on the end of their first album that I am remiss in thinking of the title of it right now. But it's essentially a song from a parent to a child as the child ages and is crying and upset and helping to comfort them. But it talks like every verse is a different stage of the child's life about what they're upset about. And the first time I heard it, I got a little misty.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, a little dusty in the room.
Hit me right in the feels. But it's so good. It's so good.
Nice. Jer, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that one of my favorite albums by They Might Be Giants is their kids album.
Yeah, they've got a bunch of them. They've got Here Comes Science and the ABCs, the 1-2-3s. There's a bunch.
Yeah,
Kate has them all on her phone because she played them for the boys when they were younger, and it's like it just comes up on shuffle and it's like, oh, this is a great song that just happens to be about the number 7.
Nice.
Exactly. Yeah. They're so good.
Yeah. Yep.
What a natural way for their career to turn.
I know. It is. It's perfect. I love it. Cool. Thanks, Andy. We will link to that and definitely check them out. I think that'd be great. Now on to a summary of the film and our history with it. Andy, this is your baby, so keep on rolling.
Here we go. Z, or Zed, or Zzz, is a 1969 French-Algerian political thriller directed by Costa Gavras, based on the 1966 novel of the same name by Vasilis Vasilikos. I apologize, Mr. Vasilikos, for that one. It tells the fictionalized version of the 1963 assassination of Greek politician Grigoris Lambrakis, who was a liberal candidate killed by extreme right-wing fanatics in Greece. The film won the 1970 Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film and Best Editing, and was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Adapted Screenplay. It won the Jury Prize and Best Actor Prize at Cannes that year, and as well as being nominated for 5 BAFTAs, winning one of them. That is essentially why I picked this movie. I wanted to do a foreign language film in kind of a standard episode. We've done some foreign language stuff and some special one-off episodes. But to come up with one that I thought would be interesting, I essentially started Googling highly rated foreign language films, and this is something that came up and seemed interesting. So that's why we watched Z.
And I think the rest of our history is nada. Whole lot of nothing.
Let's listen.
We've watched it now.
Let's listen to all the history.
Yes. Insert cricket noise here.
Perfect.
Excellent. Very good. Yeah, I like your choice of this. I think it's very interesting, and I think it ended up quite good. We shall see in part two when we talk a little bit more about the overall impressions of it, but I really enjoyed it, so we shall see, chickadee. As usual, in part one of our discussion here, we are going to be recasting the film. Here we have two major roles and three minor roles. The first major role is that of the photojournalist. Boy, Andy, you get to keep going here.
I'll let you guys know when you can talk. The photojournalist. Well, first of all, a little sidebar. Very few of the characters in this movie are actually named. So yeah. We're not saying this because we don't know their names. They actually aren't given names. The first one we're going to talk about is the photojournalist, who happened to be an intrepid investigative reporter who witnessed the events leading up to Z's assassination and was bound and determined to uncover the truth. Like all good investigators, his methods are not always ethical, but his goal was true. The original actor that played this was Jacques Perrin, who I thought did a great job. I really liked the movie. I liked his performance in it. He seemed kind of unassuming, and what I liked also was that he was not intimidated at all by the thugs and the heavies that kind of came down, that he encountered several times during the movie, attempting to interrupt what he was doing or working at cross purposes to him. I was telling Kyle, the first actor that popped into my head for this role was Anton Yelchin, who sadly has passed away. But I thought, first of all, I think that he looked like Jacques Perrin did in this movie, and just seemed like,
yeah,
that in and of itself was enough to make me want to cast him. But obviously Anton has left us, but I went in a different direction. I specifically wanted an actor. I wanted kind of a small mousy person to play this role. Someone who is very unassuming, like I said before, and can almost use that to their advantage to get into small spaces, not literally small spaces, but to kind of just weasel their way into, to finding the scoop. So I went in a very non-white male direction. I went with Kelly Marie Tran for this role.
Nice.
Who you may know as Rose Tico from the more recent Star Wars movies. So I like it because, honestly, in her performance as Rose, she was kind of small and mousy, but also had kind of some steel in her spine that maybe was not what you would expect looking at the surface of her. So I thought that could be fun to see how this plays out in this role. So Kelly Marie Tran was my choice for the photojournalist.
I like that. I like mixing it up a little bit too. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
And thank you,
Andy. I want to reflect just very briefly back on the sort of not really named characters. Uh-huh. One challenge that presented for us is when we came to pick what characters we were going to talk about. Like one of them I wrote, let's see if I have it here. I can't remember what I called it, but it was like guy in the gray suit with the mustache who sat next to the guy at that one session where they trying to, you know, warp the lawyers.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who it was. I don't know who the hell that guy was.
Which was the character that Jer is announcing, who we also didn't know who he was.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's, it made some very interesting challenges here because the names are not just photojournalists. It's the examining magistrates, which, you know, we don't necessarily have a direct translation.
Not super descriptive.
Yes.
So fortunately, the photojournalist was one of only two characters in the movie with a camera and the only one with any lines. So that one was a little easier to pin down.
Yeah, fairly straightforward. So, indeed.
Harkening back to our old days, I bounce pass to Lee.
Thank you. I wanted someone who was maybe a little bit of a chameleon, believable as, you know, somebody who would do questionable things to get a story, and have, I don't know, I guess the kind of presence that this character had, I don't know, it's, I'm not sure how to put it, but just, I guess, someone who's, like as Andy put in his description, intrepid, you kind of have to be covering political events like this. So I picked Jared Leto.
Nice.
I thought it would be interesting for him to do something like that because I do think he's a bit of a chameleon, tends to disappear into his roles, which I always appreciate whenever an actor can do that because so few of them can. So, yeah, that was the first person I thought of for this role.
Yeah, I think if you want to kind of rebrand what Andy wrote as intrepid, I think it's maybe like justifiably slimy And I feel like that is like Jared Leto or Leto to a T. Like he can be so creepy and slimy if he needs to. He can be just like a very sweet face too, but like he does that really, really well.
What I like about that pick, Lee, because you talked about the character, the actor being a chameleon, and truly for the first maybe 3 years of me hearing Jared Leto's name, I didn't know what he looked like because every image of him seemed like it was a different person. You know, looking at whatever role he happened to be playing. So obviously he has the ability to do just that.
I think so. But let's move on to Kyle.
Yeah. So I wanted somebody that was we talked about it a little bit, but essentially very persuasive. Somebody that wasn't mean, but was able to be really determined and really focused and able to kind of convince people to go along with his agenda. He did not have an exclusively liberal agenda nor an exclusively right-wing agenda, but he wanted the truth to come out. And I think he was willing to do whatever it took to push that. And the person that I came up with was Lakeith Stanfield. You might know him from totally forgot the name of the one. Oh my gosh, he's in Atlanta.
He's been in Selma and Sorry to Bother You.
That's the one, Sorry to Bother You. Good Lord, I'm sorry. There it is right there. Sorry to Bother You. Has anybody seen that?
No.
Okay, one, see it. Two, super weird. Not at all what you think it's going to be. It starts out, you might have seen the trailer for it. It's where African Americans basically use their white voice and then become super successful salespeople. So that's how it starts. And it turns out, so in the movie, David Cross plays his white voice. So he'll be talking and then he like flips over to his white voice. And Danny Glover is in it too. And Steve Buscemi, I think, is his white voice. So like half the movie, they're talking in Steve Buscemi and David Cross's voice. So that's like one, just a tiny little subset of the film that is amazingly funny and hilarious. But then it goes like way out there from there. Highly recommend it. Really weird.
Patton Oswalt.
Yep.
That's, oh my God, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, super great. So definitely check that out. I most recently saw him in Knives Out. We just saw that a couple days ago, the whodunit film by Rian Johnson.
Is that good?
And he plays, it's so good.
I want to see that. I
highly recommend it. It's kind of one of those things where like, it's sad that just a really well put together whodunit is like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. It's incredibly fun. It's maybe the most fun I had in the theater this year. So it's really, really great.
Okay.
And Chris Evans especially is great. You can tell him just like shaking off all of the sort of stodginess of Captain America, which was great, and he was perfect for it. But like his role in this is the opposite of Cap, which is great. Anyways, so he in both of those movies has this great presence where he has to be forthright and you know forward, but not so much that it puts people off. So I think he would do a very good job of that. And Mark, let's move on to you here.
Okie dokie. I was thinking for the photojournalist along similar lines as Andy. And while I also was looking for kind of haggard, I was mostly thinking Weasley. And so I picked a Weasley. my pick is Rupert Grint, who we know as Ron Weasley
from the
Harry Potter films. Yep. Although there are many Weasleys, but this is the foremost of them in the stories. Rupert Grint just... he looks tired all the time, and I kind of like that, but he's also skinny and kind of rodent-like, so I like that for this character.
I like that a lot. There's an Apple TV Plus series that came out in the last little bit that's created by M. Night Shyamalan called Servant. The premise is that a family loses their child, and I don't know how, and... essentially, like, they get a very lifelike doll, and they kind of, like, take care of that. So immediately it starts out just creepy as all hell, just because that's quite the premise. But it seems like it goes well beyond that. But he's in that, and he looks tired and ragged and Weasley. So it's spot on. But I almost, like, spit my beer out when you said, like, he looks tired all the time, because he totally does. That's perfect.
Yep, so that's my pick is the Weasley, Rupert Grint.
I like it.
The Weasley Weasley.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
All right, Jared, let's hand off to you.
I was going for, well, first and foremost, I wanted to maintain the story of this movie, which is about Greece specifically. And so I wanted actors and actresses that would fit in to that location. And so I was kind of aiming for that sort of Eastern European look, or Southeastern European, I suppose, or whatever that would be considered. But for the photojournalist, I wanted to find somebody similarly to all of you that was kind of a little bit on the meek but persistent side, perhaps. And so I chose Daniel Brühl, who you would mostly know as Zemo from the Marvel Universe. He was also in Inglourious Basterds as Frederick Zoller, and just a bunch of other stuff. He has a catalog of roles in the last decade.
But could you say his name again, please?
Daniel Brühl.
One more time.
Brühl, comma Daniel.
Now, can you say it as Christopher Lloyd?
Daniel!
Keep going.
Yeah, you got the. That's what I was looking for.
Okay. Yeah, he has that sort of everyman look, and he has a nice meekness to him, but he also, especially in his role as Zemo, definitely has a little bit of an edge that can come out and be a little bit persistent as the photojournalist was throughout this movie. So that's why I chose him.
I like it.
Nice. I like that one.
He is German. But close enough as far as actors are concerned.
Sure. Can be whatever it needs to be.
Exactly. He speaks French quite well.
Indeed.
Was he in Inglourious Basterds? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
He was Zoller.
Yeah, the slimy private who.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He was the one they were making the nice. Movies of. Right? Is that him? I think another right
yep.
one?
Yep.
Nice. All right. So for the photojournalist, oh my God, did you hear that? That was a hell of a Midwest accent that just happened.
Brühl. I thought you just said the Frodo journalist.
The Frodo journalist. Yep, the Bilbo journalist. Originally played by Jacques Perrin, Andy went with Kelly Marie Tran, Lee went with Jared Leto, I went with Lakeith Stanfield, Mark went with Rupert Grint, and Jer went with Daniel Brühl. Up next is Le Juge d'Instruction, or the Examining Magistrate, originally played by Jean-Louis Trintignant, maybe?
Close enough for rock.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate it. Sorry on behalf of all of you French folk that are having their names butchered there, or French Algerian, excuse me. So the examining magistrate is maybe the only character in this film with a neutral viewpoint of everything that's going on. He does his best to try and keep his neutrality and his wits about him, in spite of being pulled hard in all directions at all times with heavy coercion and threats. This was an interesting role, and it feel like it didn't have presence until maybe like the second half of the film. Am I remembering
yeah,
that right?
Yeah, he didn't have much. He actually didn't even arrive almost until about halfway through the film.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I'm glad I was not misremembering that. And so it's a role that like just comes in partway and then ramps up really fast and has a really good presence. I have to say, I thought the original performance was good. It's very, very stoic. I think he tries to stick to his guns in spite of all the coercion that I mentioned in there. I wanted somebody that was very just like direct, I guess, or, you know, is neutral in the way that a lawyer of this sort or a magistrate, if you will, should be. And I went with Yahya Abdul-Mateen. Is anybody here watched Watchmen on HBO?
No.
Jerry, you did, right?
Yeah, I am a few episodes in.
Okay, so he plays Cal, Angela Abar's husband.
Yeah.
And he is super good in that. He was also in the pretty terrible Aquaman movie. He was Manta. I don't know, maybe he didn't think it was terrible. I thought it was hilariously bad. He's been in The Handmaid's Tale. He's been in lots of other things. But
he's going to be in The Matrix 4, apparently.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited about that. He just has this presence that... you put your feelings and emotions onto him and his face. He can certainly emote, but the sort of status quo for him is just this very stoic, very present person, and I felt like that would be really great for the examining magistrate. So in spite of being pushed and pulled in many different directions, he could try to stay stoic, and I feel like he would really present that in there. So Yahya, plus his name is Yahya, which is just cool as hell, Y-A-H-Y-A. What an awesome name. I love that. Yahya Abdul-Mateen. If you haven't watched Watchmen, all of you out there, like, go subscribe to HBO and binge it, and then unsubscribe from HBO if you want to, but it is so good. It's like the best thing I've seen in a long time.
Really?
In any story.
It's, oh my it's God. The best TV show that exists on wow. TV right now.
Wow.
It's yeah. unreal. It is so good. Yeah.
I'm only partway through it, and I really hope his role expands because I... don't spoil anything.
Yeah,
but I hope I get to see more of him.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything. You okay, shall see, fine. My friend. You shall see.
Oh boy.
Yes.
Yeah, it's outstanding.
Yeah, incredible. All right, Andy, on to you. Who is your examining magistrate?
Jude Law.
Boom! Right to it.
Or Jude Law, as we would say in England. And I'm kind of picturing a little bit of like Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Jude Law. Jude Law. I got to stop saying Jude Law, although it is fun. I recommend trying it. I kind of like the bearded, a little more stodgy, stoic character, because I agree this character truly needs to be neutral throughout the entire thing to arrive at the appropriate conclusion. He really is kind of the only, I don't know if you want to say the only good character in the film, because he doesn't seem like he has an agenda, or he's, you know, he's not taking any bribes. He's not afraid of anybody. He's not loyal to either party or either side. He is truly objective. And I thought Jude Law could do that.
I like it. So a little bit more Dumble Jude than like Holiday Jude, or what other Judes have there been?
Jubildor.
Jubildor. This sounds like a holiday celebration.
Kyle, I got you the scented candle for Jubildor.
Thank you. That's what I've always wanted. Oh, good. Well, I will be sure to return the favor on Hagrid'smas.
Well, thank you. And Jeremy Eliop.
Okay, hear me out for a second.
The last time you said that, we did a double Isla Fisher that didn't work, okay?
All right. So, for the whatever this guy's French title is, examining magistrate. I used to be able to speak French, but I can't anymore. So I, like Kyle and Andy said, mostly Kyle, somebody who is kind of neutral, who is unwavering in just sort of the search for what's going on. And then I also wanted somebody that looks good in those 60s shaded glasses that aren't quite sunglasses, but they're not quite glasses.
Yeah, he looked really different when he took those off in that one scene. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of jarringly so.
So I went with Daniel Brühl because I accidentally forgot that I had moved him from my photojournalist pick.
I thought I just copied and pasted wrong.
he had started out as my photojournalist pick and I had moved him. So
oh boy.
He was actually my examining magistrate pick. My photojournalist pick was Adam Driver.
Okay.
So that's where I'm at right now.
That's your night.
So it's going great so far.
Yeah, we'll fix it
I'm
in
still
post.
Trying to figure out what this movie was.
If you had flipped those, I'd have been totally fine with that.
As Adam Driver as the magistrate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's just go with that then.
I like that. I like that pick.
Damn okay. it. I keep changing it. Now I have to change it again.
You pick.
No, I agree with Lee. I like Adam Driver as the magistrate and Brühl as the investigator.
I think the reason ultimately that why I switched them is because Adam Driver has just a little bit more of that scruffy sort of look to him that I could see more on this photojournalist who's kind of in the trenches a lot, as opposed to the very clean cut magistrate that was, you know, square jawed and every hair in place the entire time. So that's kind of why I switched him ultimately. But I do like both of them for either role. I think they're both excellent. So,
well, I think here's where I would challenge you on that, because going back to Daniel Brühl as the investigative reporter, I would reference The Alienist, series.
Sure.
And and his role in that is very much investigative and things like that. So I think he already has that kind of natural background. Adam Driver is also a big dude who has a very intimidating presence. That's and I find true. It hard to picture him as like kind of sneaking into the background to do his thing. He has a commanding presence about him. So to me, that makes more sense as Le Juge.
I would like to see him really like cleaned up, like super, not short hair, but like that 60s sort of greased coif and cleaned up the facial hair and just get to a really well-pronounced style. Like I think that would be a little bit of a change for him from some of his roles that he's been in recently. So yeah, we'll just go with that. Adam Driver as the magistrate. Anyway, that's all I got. And so now that I've confused myself and everyone else, let's pass it over to Mark to clean up this mess.
Thank you. Mine is much more simple. I just wanted somebody who could be very, very level and still like have that piercing gaze. Somebody who can, you know, do a lot with a little. And so to go along with my Rupert Grint, I picked Daniel Radcliffe.
That's good. Seems like they've got good chemistry.
I think so. And I think Daniel Radcliffe is an actor that does a lot with a little. He can do things very subtly. And I appreciate that. And I love that for this role. Because I need somebody that's just very steady and understated. And so that's my pick is Daniel Radcliffe.
Understated is a great word. I wish I had said that in mine. I use many, many other words, none of which were as good as that one. So good job.
Well, face. Lee, how about you?
Well, this is one of the characters I found to be the most interesting. I just liked that he was very uncorruptible, very straightforward by the book. And he was like the only character in the whole story who was trustworthy, I guess, because he looked like he was just there to see, like, as Andy said again, just to seek the truth and that's it. So I picked Liev Schreiber, thinking about his role in Spotlight. I don't know if anyone saw that.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. He's fantastic in that. I mean, everybody who's in that is really good. But he plays the editor of, I believe, the Boston Globe. And he's just like this character. He's all business. He's just in search of the truth. He's not, you know, he's not biased. And I just really like him for this role as well.
That's a good pick. I feel like we've heard from him a couple times recently, which is good. He doesn't get a lot of attention, but he's always got such great presence.
Yeah.
Was he Reign of Fire, maybe? Did we pick him? I don't know. Can't remember. Something fairly recently. Cool. Good pick. I like that. That's a good one. I like that crew. That's a good one. I'd watch a movie with that crew in it. So Le Juge d'Instruction, or the Examining Magistrate, originally played by Jean-Louis Trintignant. I went with Yahya Abdul-Mateen. Andy went with Jude Law. Jer went with Adam Driver, we think. Mark went with Daniel Radcliffe. And Lee went with Liev Schreiber. Andy, let's hand off to the major minor characters, or just the minor characters in this case. First up is the deputy. Go ahead with your deputy.
The deputy, or Z, or Z, or Z, was originally played by, is it Yves Montand?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right. Nailed it in one. the deputy is the political figurehead of the opposition and the MacGuffin of the movie, really. It is clear from the start of the film that all hopes of political change rest heavy on his shoulders. The character is based on Grigoris Lambrakis that I mentioned earlier, the Greek political figure who was assassinated in 1963. Again, also originally played by Yves Montand, who was given top billing in this film, even though his time on screen is relatively small. Looking at Eve, or looking at Z, rather, or the deputy. Again, they give him no names or too many names. Pick one. But he is the leader of this opposition political movement that is causing so much mayhem and discomfort to the established kind of military junta. How do you say that word?
Yeah, junta.
Junta. So anyway, I chose the obvious pick, Gary Oldman. I mean, literally, it just popped into my head as like, well, of course it's going to be Gary Oldman. Who else would it be?
Are we just remaking Harry Potter?
It kind of seems that way.
Yes. But. Yes, we are.
It's nice. I'm down for that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm cool.
Yeah.
So there we have it.
That's a good one. Are you thinking like the professional Gary Oldman, Bram Stoker's Dracula Gary Oldman?
Please say Dracula.
If I could put together Winston Churchill, Bram Stoker's Dracula, The Fifth Element. No, I was actually leaning a little more towards Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Ah, there you go. Very good.
Is it
good choice?
That's the right four: Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think so.
That is the correct order.
Yes,
nice.
That one.
Good work. That one. Good deal. Good choice.
Thank you. We'll move on to Lee once again. Bounce pass.
The deputy's wife, Helene, I believe, originally played by Irene Pappas. Helene carries the burden of dealing with the aftermath of her husband's assassination. She's composed and keeps her own counsel, but is clearly devastated. Very Jackie O in that way. She doesn't have a lot to do, but she does convey a lot of emotion without saying much. I don't think she has very many lines at all. So I was thinking of an actress who can do that, who can say as much silently as she can verbally. So I picked Claire Foy, who I think people would Ooh. Know most recently from The Crown. Mm-hmm. And also... she played Lisbeth Salander in The Girl in the Spider's Web, and she did a really good job in that. Like, I was very much in love with Rooney Mara's performance in Dragon Tattoo about 9 years ago, but I thought that Claire Foy did a really good job with that character this time around, so I really like her.
Yeah, she's incredible.
Yeah,
I loved her performance in The Crown.
Yeah, me too. How was Spider's Web? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I liked it. It's entertaining. I mean, it's not as good as Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, but it's also a different director and a different cast. So
yeah,
but I thought it was entertaining.
And it's not a story that's ever been made, right? It's not one of the original Swedish trilogy, right?
It's totally different. Yeah, it's outside of that. So
okay,
yeah,
cool, good deal.
But let's see, who's Mark is up next.
So I'll be talking about The General of things that I can't pronounce. Who's also the police chief. Le General is a general who is in charge of the police for some reason. He is highly decorated in military honors and slightly decorated in mustache. When Z shows up to speak at a political rally, the general could helpfully do his job and facilitate the safety of the peaceful gathering. Or... he could take the opportunity to exercise his own political voice and have Z killed. Tough decisions for Le General.
Boo earns.
So I was mostly after two things for my pick. One of them was mustache.
How much mustache?
Short mustache.
Such mustache?
Such much mustache. The other one was bluster. I really wanted somebody that could fume and huff, especially when he's being charged at the very end of the movie.
Yeah,
and somebody that really wants to take out his frustrations on all the journalists that are around. I picked a Jeffrey Rush.
Ooh, I like that.
Such much mustache.
Such yeah. Rush mustache.
Such much bluster. Too.
Yes. So that's what I was after, and I picked Jeffrey for that. I think he'll do it. He'll think he'll make me happy.
So are you thinking Les Mis Jeffrey Rush?
You're thinking Shakespeare in Love Jeffrey Rush?
Mystery Men Jeffrey Rush?
Pirates of the Caribbean Jeffrey Rush?
None of those.
Throw him in a blender.
I mean, it's what we're going to do with Gary Oldman.
That's true.
Yes, blenderize it. Pureed Jeffrey Rush. That's my pick. Mm,
nice. Throw a little juicing kale in there, and you got a delicious shake.
Hmm. Protein.
I swear, when I was watching this movie, that was Peter Sellers.
Ah, I could see that.
Yeah.
The first time when I was watching it, when they had the police line was just lined up and he was in front of them, I was like, why? That doesn't make any sense. Why is he there?
Thank you for saying that, because Peter Sellers' Jeffrey Rush is actually the one that I want.
Nice.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on to Kyle, who's talking about Vago y Iago.
Yeah. Vago and Iago are the heavies of the movie, although they're not really heavy. Okay, one of them is. And they sort of sound like wrestlers, although they're not really. Well, okay, one of them is. Either way, they are who gets called when someone needs to be whapped in the head violently with a floppy film prop billy club, good lord, that's hard to say, while driving a glorified motorized big wheel. Boy, I gave myself a mouthful there. So Vago and Iago are kind of the, I don't know, like the hired hit people, I guess, hitmen. Super weird. Like they actually fleshed these characters out more than I was kind of expecting the one, or especially the one who finds his way to the newspaper. And then they had kind of leanings that he was maybe gay. Like, I thought that was pretty interesting. Yeah. So for just kind of the hired hitmen, it actually had fairly interesting stuff. I honestly don't remember which was Vago and which is Iago. So I wanted two people that kind of looked like brothers, even though I don't think these guys were, but I kind of wish they were. Like, that's maybe a little too James Bond movie for me, but damn it, I'm going for it. So I'm going to say that Vago and Iago are brothers, sons of Iago and Marago or something. I don't know. Anyways, I'm choosing not actual brothers, but people who might as well be brothers. One is Tom Hardy. And the other is Max Remelt. Tom Hardy, you all know. He's been in a million things, and he's amazing. He's perfect in every way. Max Remelt was in the show Sense8 on Netflix. I don't know if anybody watched that. It's the Wachowskis series about people that can kind of, like, sort of feel each other's senses. It's really hard to describe. You should totally watch it. It's a lot of fun. But he plays Wolfgang in that, and he is a very much a, like, fighter, tough guy, like, you know, kind of grew up tough. His uncle was like a famous mobster or something like that. He's great. And together, I think they would actually add a little bit of gravitas to the role while still being able to maintain some of the kind of quirkiness that made the original roles more interesting than I think they deserve to be. So, yeah, that's what I'm going.
Kyle, I'm kind of surprised you didn't go with the obvious low-hanging fruit of Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly.
That's pretty good. I like that. Maybe a different tonal movie. Maybe this would be like Y instead of Z or something that. Like slightly different. Yeah.
Well, when you get blenderized Gary Oldman and Jeffrey Rush, this is maybe what we deserve.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Last but not least, Jer, tell us about your fine casting choice.
I am casting Le Procureur, who was originally played by Francois Perrier. And he was definitely someone who was in this movie. And he is a slimy little yes man who is just trying to smooth things over and is definitely in the pocket of the opposition. Opposition being not the leftist.
You mean the establishment.
But the antagonists.
Sure, the military. The bad guys. And he's not on screen for overly much, but when he is, he's just sort of like kind of a little bit frantic and a little bit just trying to like get things done, get things finished. Like, let's just do this and get out of here kind of idea. And it's not to anybody's benefit, and he's really largely pretty useless. I chose Stellan Skarsgård for that. And I wanted not Chernobyl Stellan Skarsgård, but maybe a little bit of when he was kind of nuts in Avengers, maybe, where he was running around in his underwear. but more of that just sort of jittery kind of person that is just like uncomfortable and just trying to be out of the situation that he's in. And I think Stellan Skarsgård would be quite good at that, and making us think that this is sort of this career bureaucrat who is completely bought out already and doesn't care about anything.
I think you wanted Deep Blue Sea Stellan Skarsgård.
Yes, exactly. That's the movie I didn't care about that I was thinking of.
Oh my God, that's amazing. I think the only thing that I would add to your description of the original character, Jer, is that he might as well have carried around a rug with him under which he would have been able to sweep everything with regards to the case. Like it almost had that degree of literalism of just being like, foot, 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 like sliding underneath.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think Stellan would do a fine job with that.
Just a little,
just a paper shredder in his pocket that every time anything, oh, this is important.
Nice. I like it. All right, so that wraps up the major and minor characters, and with that, the first part of our discussion of Z. Nice work, gentlemen. That was fun. In spite of not knowing who any of the characters were, we managed to recast them, so good job, us. Remakers Mark is a proud member of the Math is Hard Network. To find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast on the network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you will find show notes with links to all of the people, movies, and links discussed in this episode. This information is also attached to the show file in the podcast client of your choice. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, including iTunes and Google Play, where you can rate and review Remakers Mark, which would mean the world to us. We are on Facebook, search for Math is Hardnet or Remakers Mark, Twitter at Remakers Mark, and Instagram at Remakers Mark Podcast. So please join in the discussion there as well. So, gentlemen, we made it through the first half of this movie that we had never seen nor heard of before, and I think we did a great job. I'm actually really looking forward to talking about our thoughts about this movie a little bit more further in part two. So until then, when we dig into this a little bit deeper, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
Up next is Le Juge d'Instruction, originally played by the examining magistrate. That's not at all right. Let me try that again.
Sorry. Shouldn't have been that funny, but it was.
I just kept reading.
Woo-hoo!
Lordy. That's what happens when I try to flip it on the fly. Here we go.